This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Justice for jazz artists. What, no minimum wage? No pension? New York City's Musicians Union has been leafleting outside the Blue Note, a major jazz club, in a campaign to gain pension benefits and a minimum wage for jazz artists. The disagreement between the union and club owners dates all the way back to 2005, when union leaders and the nightclub successfully lobbied the New York State Legislature for a reduction in the sales tax on tickets, with the extra revenue to be used to pay for pension and health benefits for the artists.
While jazz has been recognized by the U.S. Congress as America's national treasure, and clubs like the Blue Note, Birdland, the Jazz Standard, Iridium, and the Village Vanguard are still filling seats and charging hefty prices, the jazz players find themselves facing old age with no pension and little in the way of Social Security, since much of their pay was in cash and off the books.
It's just a sin that we have no pension, said Keisha St. John, 72, a jazz vocalist who was distributing leaflets. I will not have a pension before I die. Well, with that, special welcome to Keisha St. John and John O'Connor, who's the vice president of the American Federation of Musicians, Local 802, and that's Keisha St. Joan. See, because I just picked her up on St. John Street, so now I'm getting it all bollocked up there. But you
and
see,
we know St. Joan. She was a fighter now.
That's right.
And, of course, you should have appreciated that we opened with Miles Davis.
Oh, I love it.
Because one of the things, just a little bit of a sidebar here that Keisha was telling me, is one of the things that drove her from opera, which is what she was trained in, was the music of Miles Davis.
Miles Davis. That was it. And after that, I fell in love. fell in love. You know, so. And then we have, you want me to talk more about me?
Well, we're going to get into okay. that in a minute. But what I want to do is, I should say that I've had the pleasure of just sitting there and reveling in the music of vocalist Keisha St. Joan on numerous occasions in Brooklyn, where some of the finest musicians actually live. And it's scandalous and painful to realize that some of the best music in the world and its musicians very often find themselves destitute. And I keep going back and thinking, what, are there no workhouses? Are there no, really, what's going on? And why don't we begin with John O'Connor, who is now the vice president of the American Federation of Musicians, Local 802. What in heck's name is it that the club owners will not relent and we can't get a minimum wage and a pension for our beloved musicians?
Well, we hope they will, actually. I think you have to look a little bit at the history to understand what's going on. The Musicians Union founded their pension fund in 1959, and it was started with recording musicians and musicians who worked the studios with labels that were union labels, labels that were signed on to the union. And from there, it went to Broadway, Symphonic. But that pension never reached the clubs because the clubs were never unionized. There is a mythology that there are union clubs and non-union clubs, and that comes from the days when, especially in New York City, if you wanted to play in a nightclub, you did have to be a member of the union.
That's right.
But that was because of the union's internal rules more than anything else. And for the most part, the union has never entered into a collective bargaining agreement with the nightclubs in New York City. And we believe that it's time for that to happen. Somebody the other day said to one of our reps, well, isn't this a little too little too late? And my answer to that is it's never too late. Yes, it is late. I think this should have happened many years ago. But what's happened most recently that's different is that the union has decided that it's going to stop waiting for the clubs to come to the table, and we're going to begin using some leverage to get them to the table, because we've been waiting too long.
Well, we're going to find out more about that. And Keisha, I just want you, we were speaking as we came here about, like, what Dizzy Gillespie had a pension fund of, great artists, well-known artists, what, $350 a month. So tell us really what is happening in the industry and what it's like for the artists.
Well, I think it's rather hard for us because there's a lot of times, especially as you get closer to my age, more musicians are becoming ill, because when you're on the road, you're not taking care of yourself like you're supposed to. So you have doctors, you need doctors, you need dentists, you need, like we talked about, knee replacements and all these different things. And who's there to help us? There's nothing there, no pension, no one. And that's where the Jazz Foundation of America comes in, and they do help. Thank God for them. You understand? But with the children, what bothers me about the young people that are coming up now, they need to get an honor system, because there's no honor among the musicians. If I can get a gig, then I go play for $5 an hour and get a meal, because this is what some of the clubs are doing down in the village, I believe. $5 an hour to play your hard-earned music. You know, mm-hmm. You pay good money for your future and your training, and then you get $5 an hour and a meal? I don't think so. I don't think that's correct at all.
John, 5 years ago, the New York State Legislature gave a rebate or an exemption to the club owners with the express purpose, from what I understand, of establishing a pension fund. So where does that stand?
Well, it was the union leadership at that time believed that if they could get the sales tax on entertainment in the music clubs, I think it was under a certain amount of seats, 250 seats, which pretty much includes all the major jazz clubs in New York City, to eliminate the sales tax, that would be a money stream that could then be diverted to pay for musicians' pensions. In fact, that money stream, if you do the math, is much more than what would be needed to pay for musicians' pensions. But there was never any reciprocal agreement in place. So once the tax, we did succeed in getting the tax dropped, but the music clubs after that time, when the musicians union tried to reach out to them, they couldn't get any response from the music clubs. All we wanted to do was sit down and have a conversation with them, and that conversation has never happened.
And have they in any way responded to the current campaign?
No, except with the exception of one club. We have actually had three meetings with the owner, or one of the owners of the Iridium. We don't know where that's going. They've said that they believe that what we're asking for is fair. Whether they'll sign on the dotted line, we don't know. That's the only club that has even said anything to us. There are two other clubs that have responded to the press in an article that came out in the New York Times a couple weeks ago. The reporter they called all the clubs, and the only clubs that responded were the Village Voice and the Blue Note. But basically, both those owners were quoted as saying they believe also that musicians should get pension, but they're not going to be the ones that make it happen. So our point of view is that the best way to get musicians' pensions is for it to happen with the clubs, because that's where the money comes in.
Well, since we mentioned that, Keisha, I just want you to relate one of your experiences with a club I'd spent years going to, and I will give some serious reconsideration as to whether I will or whether I will be somewhat disruptive if I do go in, and that is the Blue Note. What happened when you were actually handing out flyers there trying to encourage a club that has made its profit, and I should say enormous profit, mm-hmm. Generally tickets are like, they had Manhattan Transfer that was like $65 a ticket.
Right.
What happened when you were trying to encourage them to do what they should do, which is essentially, I keep thinking about like slave labor. I mean, really, that's what's happening. Talking about musicians who work for a plate and $5.
Right.
And then you'd have clubs like the Blue Note, $65 a pop easily.
Right.
What happened to you when you were trying to encourage them to do what they should, to work with the musicians?
Leon Bell was with us. And what was the other young man?
He's the director of organizing it locally,
yes.
802.
Yes, and Bobby?
Bobby Shankin, who's a musician, member of 802.
And so...
And the owner of the Blue Note?
Mr. Ben Susan.
And what did Ben say?
Oh, well, I really can't use the language. I really can't. But he did come out, and I was smiling, so he looked at me, and then he looked over at the two fellas. Then he looked at me again, and then he looked at them, and then he said, "Get off my...
..."
Sidewalk.
FCC.
Get off my sidewalk, you pieces of...
..."
T.
Yes.
And
one of the seven words you can't say in
And he said he did that about three times, and he said he was going to call the police on us, but the police were already across the street.
and specifically, what were you asking?
The only thing we did, we handed out leaflets. And
those leaflets were to what end? What were they saying?
To show what was happening with the musicians and them not receiving pension, and just giving information to the public. But the wonderful thing about it, most of the public were very interested. And that's a good thing. You know, and they did take and as long as we weren't handing it at the door, so we stayed by the sidewalk, on the sidewalk, by the edge of the sidewalk, and we handed out. But he was so very upset.
Owners, managers, they have a tendency to be upset when the workers want to organize or get better wages, benefit, working conditions. I don't know. There's something in their bloodstream.
They just get the money that they're saving from the tax. I mean, they've already got the money.
Of course.
And they're just pocketing the money for the last 5 years. I mean, Keisha, I mean, you know, what really got you out there, though? I mean, this has been going on for a long time. I know the union started a new campaign, but what made you decide to come out that night?
Well, I'll tell you what my reason is. I figured last century we didn't have this. We weren't able to accomplish this last century. This is this century. And we're talking about this decade, but I'm talking about this century. I think this century we need to really correct the wrongs that has been accepted as right.
And what happens to your sisters and brothers who have worked all their lives and given what this country considers to be a national treasure to the public? What happens to them as they age?
They fall apart. They do. Some of them, I notice with diabetes, just like Clark Terry right now, my heart is breaking for him. He's just lost his leg, and it doesn't seem that he's really getting any better right now. So that is happening with a lot of the musicians, and this is the thing that bothers me. As far as we are, to me, we're healers. Anyone who gets ill or doesn't feel well or depressed or whatever the case is, and they put their music on to listen, we are the healers. We are like the doctors. We are like the doctors who are not getting paid. You understand? We are the healers, but we're not getting anything. Mm-hmm. All we're doing is we're sharing our soul, our music with everyone else letting them feel wonderful and all they're happy and the whole thing. But then we go home broke.
And John, this is an ongoing campaign. You'll be out there again?
Well, this is the beginning of a phase. I came into office a couple of years ago, and we have been building the strategy for a campaign to get this done. And in early December, we started the first phase of what we are calling an escalating campaign, escalating leverage campaign, to get the major clubs to come to the table and talk to us. Now, understand, from what we know, the musicians are getting paid fairly in the major clubs, in the six major jazz clubs in New York City. The issue for us, for the most part, is that they're not getting pension contributions. As you mentioned before, musicians tend not to get much Social Security credit built up because they do a lot of their work off the books. And when they get to when they get elderly, and they need that help, all they have now is charity from places like the Jazz Foundation. I mean, Dizzy Gillespie was one of the lucky ones, $350 a month pension. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of elderly jazz musicians who are getting no pension whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we think this is a fair demand. What it costs the clubs to do this? We figured out for one musician to get a pension contribution for the night that they play in a club, it would be the cost of about two drinks. So this is not a matter of money. It really isn't a matter of money for the clubs. They can afford to do this. It's not going to break anybody's back. They just are refusing to do this. They are refusing to take the responsibility for this. And we are going to stay there until they realize that we're not going away.
And what can we in the public do? Because I go to these clubs, and sure, we see some of the better names that prosper a little bit more, although I would even really question that. But some of the finest musicians in the world, what are we as consumers? How can we support the
You can
campaign?
Do one thing. You can go to the Justice for Jazz Artists webpage. I think it's justiceforjazzartists.org. And if that's not the exact address, you can Google it. But there's a petition there on that website that people can go and sign. And this is a website that we are going to be continuing to update and develop over the next several months. So there will be things for people to do. We are right now leafleting the clubs, but we will be having other actions, demonstrations in the future. So we would ask people to go to that website and go back to it from time to time to see what there is for the public.
Maybe what I'll do is, as a member of Occupy Wall Street, we can occupy the Blue Note and make it clear in the audience that we want a pension.
Yeah.
We are the 99%.
Yeah, that's right.
We want a pension. Well, you're going to help. You're the musicians. You're going to get me a little bit more rhythmic than that. But you're going to take us out with a kind of a rhythm, right?
Oh, you mean the song that I wrote I wrote last year for Justice for Jazz?
Justice for Jazz.
Justice for Jazz. Justice for Jazz. Justice for Jazz musicians. Justice for Jazz. Justice for Jazz. Justice for Jazz musicians. Well, we take you to the left, baby, then we swing you to the right. Well, we swing you all day long and even all through the night. So we want justice for jazz, justice for jazz, justice for jazz musicians. Well, we want justice for jazz, justice for jazz, justice for jazz musicians. Doo doo ba ni doo ba bi boo bi, doo 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 ba doo ba ni doo bi, doo ya doo bi doo yo bi doo ba doo bi. Justice for jazz musicians.
Oh, encore, encore.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, Keisha St. Joan and John O'Connor, local 802. You know, I spoke to McCoy Tyner in the last century and his brother. So you're absolutely right. This is the new century, and yes. we have got to get justice for Black classical music,
yes.
justice for jazz, mm-hmm. and we're going to do it now. And maybe we'll talk about occupying some of those clubs until they do cooperate. Thank you so much for being with us, and that's a great song. We're going to use it. We're going to exploit it constantly.
Thank you. You are so wonderful, both of you. Thank you so very much.
Well, it's our pleasure.
Justice for Jazz Artists campaign here at Local 802 managed to get a lot of things happening for jazz artists, like the repeal of the tax that will allow the clubs to pay into the musicians' pension and health plan anytime musicians work in clubs in New York. Every jazz artist should be able to build a life that has health insurance, that has a possibility of a pension at some point in their lives.
Musicians play a very vital role in the culture of New York City, and it's important that they're protected with a proper pension plan and also all the rights that are due to them. So I support very strongly that all of us get involved.
You need the pension, and you also need health benefits, and it really is that simple.
There are a lot of things that jazz musicians need. We should give everything we've got when we play, but we certainly would like to get a livable wage, and in addition, have some of that money put aside so that it's there when we need it.
Musicians in the jazz community must have access to the same benefits and financial security in retirement that we enjoy in the theater.
It's been needed for a long time, you know, where the musicians can get pensions and benefits and live happily like everybody else.
I don't think to be a jazz musician you should have to swear an oath of poverty to be an artist.
What we musicians need to be about is making sure that people don't consider us as playing music, but making music and making a living at doing it. It's so important. And it's so important for us to have the support of people like you to be sure that this thing is a success.
I'd like to see more jazz musicians being privy to a pension. I know what it means to have this cushion at this point in life.
I hope you, the audience, will help us with Justice for Jazz. We appreciate it, and we thank you, thank you, thank you.
This is Jimmy Owen saying, I want you to help us to make justice for jazz artists a reality. Yes, let's make it real.
And in addition to Jimmy Owens, you just heard from Bob Crenshaw, Bernard Perdue, Reggie Workman, Randy Weston, Benny Powell, Junior Mance, among others advocating for justice for jazz artists.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.